Look up there in the sky. It's a bird, a plane. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Those boys are so handsome.
One writer,
one artist,
one weekly discussion of comics and culture. I'm your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd. Look at my notes there.
Dramatic pause. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more.
Take a breath.
You got to.
Breathe it out there.
You need to breathe?
No.
No? You don't need to breathe?
I don't think so.
Yes, I need to breathe.
Okay. Well, there we are.
I guess Eric doesn't need to breathe.
Probably right? Not. Probably. I mean, I don't know for a fact. It's been a while.
So, hi guys. How's it going? Eric and I are in the same room, mm-hmm. as is our custom.
Yep.
We do that occasionally.
Uncomfortably staring each other in the face.
That's pretty comfortable on my end.
Oh, you're not. Well, you know.
I don't.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Okay, good.
That's good.
That's good. We got a good episode in front of you. We got some more Grant Morrison to discuss because I know Eric loves talking about Grant Morrison and his pretentiousness.
We'll see how this goes.
We're also discussing Andre the Giant, the book, the comic book,
and Andre
the Giant. We're also discussing the giant named Andre.
Mm-hmm. It's a good name for a giant.
So be prepared for lots of wrestling.
Wrestle talk. We are going to end this podcast by suplexing each other.
I'm not against that, honestly. Okay. You better give your computer some caffeine.
I don't need to. It'll be fine.
But before we get into any of that, we're going to go right into checking in.
It's happening.
That was a good noise, too. I like that noise.
Good. That's the best. It's the noisiest.
Checking is the segment where Eric and I talk about what we went up to during the week and give you recommendations or sometimes anti-recommendations.
Mm-hmm. It's like an anti-electron.
I don't know what that is.
It's the same thing as a positron.
Is like Ghostbusters that we're talking about now?
Sure.
Ghostbusters?
It is a Ghostbuster, yes.
I wasn't saying that it was a Ghostbuster, but they have positron things in their things.
Yes, it's an anti-electron.
In their packs.
Yeah.
That's how they fight ghosts.
Yes.
You bust ghosts with positrons.
It's like an electron with a positive charge. It's an anti-electron.
Are we going to do an anti-left and...
it's a real thing.
Anti-left is a real thing.
Well, no, that's some dumb shit that I made up. But I did not make up an anti-electron.
I believe you. What do you want to check? What are you checking in with there?
Physics?
Positrons?
No, I'm going to check in with... Actually, I am checking in with physics.
Whoa!
See it right here.
I see it. He's holding it.
He's holding it.
Physics.
I'm holding physics. It is a book I am currently enjoying reading. I have had it for a while. It is called Computing with Quantum Cats.
I'm already in fan of it.
I know, you're just...
It mentions cats in the title. It can't be bad.
You're just emphatic and excited about it. I'm sure.
Cats.
But do you know what it is about?
No.
It's about physics and it's got the word quantum and it's got cats. So you obviously know the obviously.
You're going to Sean Connery.
Obviously, this is about physics. God, we're very stupid when we're in the same room together.
It's about that dude who did the thing with the box and the cat.
Schrodinger. Scrotum Dinger. That is his name.
Schrodinger, yes.
So either you're punched in the nuts or you're not. Scrotum Dinger. Yes.
It's quantum superposition.
Yes. Or you're punched in the nuts and not punched in the nuts. Anyway, it is a book about quantum computing. The section that I'm in now is just a big biography of Alan Matheson Turing. One of the most interesting people I think that's ever lived.
They're releasing a movie soon
with
Benedict Cumberbatch.
With the Cumberbatch.
The sexiest man alive who also happens to look a little bit like a frog.
He's not an attractive man. but apparently he is the most attractive man that's ever lived.
One or the other. He's either an alien or... Yeah. I think that's the thing.
It's the voice.
It certainly doesn't hurt.
Yeah. That and being a sociopath.
He's not a sociopath.
Sherlock kind of
Sherlock is not a sociopath. Mm. He's not. They make it look like he is. He's not a sociopath. Like
okay. you're an expert.
I read that book one time.
We're a little bit off the rails.
Okay, quantum computing.
I won't go into too much of the details, but it's about a pretty poorly defined sort of new paradigm of computing that may or may not be a big deal, you know, in 10 or 20 years, but as it stands, it will push computing power forward tremendously and do a lot of things like undermine the security of cryptography and all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's pretty exciting, but it's, you know, right now it's framed around the whole idea of, you know, existing in superpositions and it's I know the face by you're making that you're finding this tremendously interesting.
I'm just
It's framed. It's framed around the whole thought experiment of Schrodinger's cat that it, you know, cat is both alive and dead.
Yes.
And then you can put it in either one state or the other. Well, that's basically what.
Binary.
Well, yes, but because it's not just binary, it exists in four states: alive, dead, dead and alive, and neither alive nor dead. And that is the whole quantum thing. That's the difference. It turns, instead of doing base 2, which is what computers operate in, you know, on or off, it is base 4. So it's just a little bit better numbering system. I don't know.
Okay. I need to read that book. That's what you're telling me.
I think you should read the book. I think it's really interesting.
Is there an audiobook for it?
I haven't looked that up yet, because I bought this at a used bookstore. Someone else thought it was rubbish, apparently. They're like, this is boring. All that stuff that Eric just said.
I'll see if there's an audiobook for it.
But it's background on how computers work and why they're making this step into quantum computing and the benefits of it. And it's really fascinating stuff.
Whee!
Yes, you look so excited to read Computing with Quantum Cats.
To be fair, I look like this most of the time.
Yeah, well, it's true. You are twirling your mustache.
I am twirling my mustache.
You are. So I do this. That means something.
It does mean something. And mm-hmm. What else you got? Eric, anything?
The Bendis book, Words for Pictures, that we've talked about many times today already.
Already?
I'm really enjoying it. Fraction wrote in it.
I saw Brubaker when I was...
Yeah, Brubaker is in it. It's really fun to read. One of the things that I've enjoyed reading through it is apparently Matt Fraction didn't write Hawkeye. Apparently, he's like, David Aja, please write Hawkeye for me. And then he did. They were using a scripting style that Stan Lee invented called Marvel style.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you familiar?
Oh, yeah.
Well, basically, Marvel style is really, really vague, sort of a rough outline of a comic book script, and he apparently invented it when he was writing 8 or 9 books a month at once and had no choice but to give a lot of creative control to the artists.
It's why Ditko and Kirby are so...
Yes. Yeah, they're so raw about...
Hey, we did all this work. We created these people. Exactly. You get all the credit. That's why.
And that makes a lot of sense. There is a really hilarious example of a Marvel-style script in Words for Pictures. Stan Lee's a goon. And I dare say his writing is kind of bad, but it's cheesy.
You need to read that Sean Howe book.
We've talked about this many times. I'm sure it's delightful. What's that book called?
I forget the actual, like, the full title. It's Unofficial Marvel History or something like that, or History of Marvel, or I don't know. But it's by Sean Howell, and you search that, you'll find it. But we're getting off topic.
No, but,
Stanley is either revered or hated, and it's in between.
He deserves equal measure of both. It seems like he does deserve equal measures of both. But, you know, he's a flawed human like all of us. Anyway, I think it's really interesting that it's a how to write comics book by someone who is, like, active in writing comics now, because the other two books that I have that are notable about writing comics are by Dennis O'Neill. You're familiar with Dennis O'Neill, Batman.
He wrote Batman. He edited Batman for a long time.
Very talented writer. The other book that I have is by Alan Moore, and I think both of them came out after sort of their heyday, and all of the writers in this book are, I mean, we're reading almost everyone in this book every month.
Yeah. There's one, I think Greg Pak has one out.
Does he?
It came out a couple years ago. But, I mean, he was writing. He's still writing comics, so. But he has one, I think. I haven't read it. I assume it's fine.
I imagine it's okay, but these are the people that I think that I admire, you know, in the current sort of environment of comic book writers. They're the talent that I would want to read their advice. So, really good book. I'm really enjoying reading it.
Yeah, comics. I gave it a thumbs up too.
I know, you guys,
it's not good for the radio, but
it's good for me though. I get to experience it. Thumbs,
two thumbs, way up.
Yeah, they're like children.
Kinda.
Yes.
This is your cue.
My cue.
You have to make some joke about it. I don't do anything. I'll wait.
So, Robbie, cue. What did Q do?
I'm checking in with an older video game again. Steam sales.
Is it exactly 6 months old?
I don't think it's precisely 6 months old, but it came out last year, I think. I think it was on the Steam sale. Capcom had all their games on sale. It's a game called Remember Me. It's okay.
That was a lot of dramatic buildup for meh.
It has really interesting things in it, but a lot of it is kind of like the art style is very beautiful. It's but done by French video game studio, so it looks like a Luc Besson movie. It's set in the future where a technology is taken over called Memorize, where you can implant memories in your head and basically just have any memories you want. But it is a faulty technology. It makes people, like, devolve into this weird mutated state and all that. I think the most interesting thing about the game is you'll play a memory hunter, you know, you're getting hunted basically by the authorities because they don't want you out around as you're like a kind of this rebellious force. And, you are one of the few people who can remix memories. You can alter people's memories. So you go, that's the interesting mechanic in this game is there are occasions you go inside a specific memory and change small details to basically change how they remember something and it will alter their behavior. The very first instance is a bounty hunter is trying to capture you. You go into her memory and try and change something so that she's now on your side. And that's very interesting, but most of it is just very linear kind of exploration. The fight system is kind of interesting because you have set combos, but you can change what each combo, like you can change what successive attack will do. Like it may regenerate health or do more damage or reduce your cooldowns on your special abilities and stuff like that. That's a little interesting, but it was $6. It only took 10 hours or so. It's a pretty short game. It's interesting.
Reluctant to call it good.
No, it's not good, I would say. It's pretty. It's above average, but it's not good. I give it a 6. If we're going from 1 to
6 is pretty low.
I don't give it a 6 like normal video game reviewers give. They give 6 is like it's the worst Like, if it's not as 8 or 9, you shouldn't buy it.
Yeah.
But I don't... I do not regret spending my $6. If it looks interesting, check it out. The memory thing is cool. That's really cool. The ending, they do not hit the landing very well on the ending. I think that's my biggest complaint. The story's interesting until the end. Which a lot of video games do that.
It's very hard, apparently, to end a video game, right?
It must be.
Usually, I mean, I believe there's probably like some, I don't know. It's a pretty common thing to criticize the ending of video games, but be interesting to explore and write about why they're so hard to do well.
I don't know.
I think it's worth thinking about. Anyway, that one's terrible and you hate it.
Yep. Let's say that.
Yes.
Terrible, I hate it, remember me.
So, double do not buy on this game that I don't even remember the name of.
There's the other thing I want to check in with, something I heartily recommend, and that is a book called Wolf in White Van by John Darnielle. Just came out this week, actually. It came out on Tuesday. John Darnielle is famously known as lead singer of the Mountain Goats. Singer-songwriter, indie kind of, I don't know.
Indie wuss rock.
Indie icon. Singer-songwriter.
Wuss rock.
It's not even rock. I mean, to call it rock is... Exactly. I don't think he would describe it as rock. He listens to black metal exclusively, almost, and yet he only sings and plays like acoustic, like singer song indie music. I don't think he would call it rock at all.
Battle of the Gentle Bands.
Yeah, but his book, like, he writes kind of very poetic kind of songs. Like, his song lyrics are probably the best part of his music, and his book is very good. His prose is beautiful. It's a short book. Just over 200 pages, so it's not very long. It took me 2 hours to read it. I read fast, but I don't think anyone would take too long to read this book. It's pretty short. It is it's not in chronological order, although it's not like it's William Faulkner where it's impossible. It's really easy to follow. It's not ever confusing. But this guy basically, he runs a mail order role-playing game. Like, it's kind of like, if you ever played a MUD. Have you ever played a MUD?
I know what a MUD is.
A text adventure, basically.
You want to explain what it is?
A MUD is, MUD is short for multi-user dungeon. It's a very early form. It's basically a very early MMO.
Ran them on BBSs and things like that in the sort of proto-internet days.
Yeah, it was basically, you get a description. You start off in a room, you have a character, and it tells you the options. You can go north, you can go east. You can also, like, look at things. Like, I want to look at a table or something. But basically, it's in this kind of apocalyptic wasteland. He leads people through mail order systems. He also has a awful facial disfigurement from an accident. And that is key to the mystery of the book. Like, how did he get hurt? Why is his life, you know, he goes back and forth between his a young child and a teenager and his adult years. But his prose is gorgeous. I was not sure how it would be, because I was excited to read it, just because I think he's a really smart guy. But it's a very good book. I would recommend it to pretty much anyone, especially people like us. It's very much, like, keyed in that loner male aesthetic, like, outcast aesthetic. I know that the way the character feels when he's in high school and a teen, that's how I felt. And, like, it's very much, he loves Conan. Like, he loves Conan the Barbarian. And this is pre-internet when he's a teenager. So he's, like, getting mail order sword catalogs and loves Conan fiction. So it's great. If get it. If you like reading, you'll like it. I can't imagine.
Reading is stupid.
Okay, well then it's not for Eric, but you know.
I will only read unless there's free pizza.
He's also, the audiobook is coming out the 30th, and he's reading it.
Neat.
But I can't.
What was the title again?
Wolf in White Van.
Neat.
Which, it's actually interesting when you get to that when he describes what that is. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I support this.
But, that's it for me. We're gonna go from checking in to weekly floppies. The floppiest part of the week. Weekly Floppies is the part of the show where Eric and I review the week's books, so tell you to buy or do not buy them. And you should listen to us, because we're cool guys. Eric's wearing a pink shirt. How cooler could that be?
Yeah, I can't get any cooler than that.
I'm wearing an orange and black shirt.
I know. Like Halloween's right around the corner.
Just like Halloween.
Halloween!
Halloweeny roosters.
Yep. Yep.
We went to Cracker Barrel.
We did. It
was... They had Halloweeny roosters.
I guess that's a thing.
What they sell. They sell roosters with witches' heads. But we're starting off Thor God of Thunder, number 25, last issue of Thor God of Thunder. God-sized final issue. I really like that they call it God-sized.
Exactly as big as a god.
One God-sized.
One god.
It is written by Jason Aaron with art. It's basically broken down into kind of three mini-stories with Aram Guerra, Simon Visley, and Ysed Ribic doing the art on these respectively. It's kind of framed by the three granddaughters of Thor in the far future reading these tales in the library.
What is it they call themselves? The Lightning Lasses or something like that?
I do not know.
It was something with alliteration.
It makes sense. It would be. Yeah, I don't know. I like the Lightning Lass, but I don't... Lightning Lasses, but I don't know if that's actually what they are.
I don't recall.
But it tells kind of a... One tells like kind of an origin story of Malekith. One tells... what's the second one?
Frost Giants.
Oh, yeah. Young Thor fighting Frost Giants.
I actually had zero clue, because I tend to read the credits page last, if at all, but I had no idea that Beasley was doing this until I got to this panel, and I'm like, that looks like Beasley. And I looked it up, and sure enough,
it is him.
Yeah, it certainly is.
With this Thor, the hair. What? Wow. That hair is something.
That's the way he does. I like this a lot more than most of the other art I've seen by him. I mean, he was one of the reasons that I hated 90s art. Although there was art in the 90s, like he did designs for a game called Weapon Lord, which I was obsessed with because I love the designs. And it wasn't until I was much older that I realized that Beasley did them. But it looks like this.
Yeah, there's... The framing story is Ysed Ribic.
Yes.
And they start reading the story of how Thor lost his hammer. And we get a kind of a preview of what's to come.
The Girls of Thunder.
Girls of Thunder?
Yes. Okay.
But the old Thor wants him to stop. And the final shot is Thor unsuccessfully picking up his hammer. I expected this to touch a little bit more into why he couldn't grab his hammer, but I suppose that's going to be the kickoff arc in the next male Thor. I mean, he's still going to be around. I don't know what they're going to call that book, because I know the Thor book is going to be the female Thor. I don't know if it's going to cover both of them, or they're going to be separate Thor books or not, but...
I kind of wish that they would cover both in one book and sort of hit back and forth, but... Chances are they're going to sell them separately. I mean, we'll see how that goes.
But this is more just like a kind of a capstone on the entire run, not necessarily kind of leading into... You get the idea of where Malekith came from, and you get more young Thor and these Frost Giants and the Skull. And like it's planting a few seeds that they're obviously going to read. We're going to read about in the next book as well.
I think some of them work pretty well. Like, I like the Malekith story. I like some of the other elements of this book. But this, in general, is sort of one of those books that's just saying, hey, wait, all this other neat stuff is going to happen. And I think, as such, is pretty pointless.
It's for people who love this book and just want to get, like, a bow on it. Like, you can't just... The last issue was not good. It didn't tie up anything. It didn't say, hey, get ready for the next thing. This is saying, hey, get ready for the next thing.
And I get that. I just am kind of ready to get on to the next thing. This one did... Other than the background of Malekith, there was not a whole lot of new information. But I am eagerly looking forward to the next arc. This one, I think, is a safe one to skip unless you're like yourself, you seem to think that it's worth reading because you've read every other. I own
digital copies of every single issue of this run. I love this run.
Well, it's a very worthy book. Looking at me.
No, I mean it.
I mean it. I legitimately mean that. It's really good.
I know. But you. That was. Hopefully that was pun intended.
I'm sure that it was. It seeped into my head somehow.
But it's really kind of like omens for the future.
Yeah.
If you're not reading this book, you don't need to.
I think it's empty. I say skip it if you're not already heavily invested. Wait for the new Thor arc. That's what I'm excited about.
October 1st.
Yep.
Which Jason Aaron, there's the aftermath he talks about it. So no more he said Ribic.
That is a bummer.
That is a bummer. It seemed he was like made for this. But Russell Dodderman is picking up the reins.
You better do a good job.
Better. Murder him.
I will. Kill him. Don't fuck with my Thor.
Jason Aaron and his mighty beard.
He's pretty beardy.
He's a very beardy gentleman.
Yes.
But, I'm a bi.
Yeah, I'm not. As if that wasn't clear. But not because it's terrible. God-sized and all that.
God-sized. Next up, we are jumping over to Avengers number 35. This is the very first issue of the 8 months forward, time runs out, whatever they're calling it, where we're kind of put into the position of basically an 8 month time jump, and we're trying to figure out what happened in the meantime. And we're given lots of clues, but we don't know for certain. I never actually read the credits on, I think, did I? I did read the credits. Writer for this, Jonathan Hickman, pencils by Jim Chung, Paco Medino, Nick Bradshaw, and Dustin Weaver, inks by Mark Morales, Guillermo Ortega, there's five inkers on this, Juan Velasco, Nick Bradshaw, Dustin Weaver, colors by Frank Martin, David Curiel, letters by Corpetta. Just about ran out of breath just reading that. But we get, this whole Avengers world that Hickman has built. Illuminati have brought it down for doing something related, obviously, to the events in New Avengers, but we don't know for sure because this is 8 months later. All those guys are basically being hunted by S.H.I.E.L.D. Avengers Tower has been taken over. We're following Cannonball is on another world. I think she's a Shi'ar world. It's not presently clear where he's, but it's the Imperial Guard, so I assume it's a Shi'ar world. You know, Hyperion's being beardy in the Savage Land with Thor. Everyone's looking for Tony Stark. Everyone's looking for Reed Richards. All the Illuminati are wanted. And we get Amadeus Cho kind of breaking into the tower trying to do some black ops or something. With War Machine, Captain Marvel, and Hawkeye confronting him.
It's actually it's a drone. The War Machine. So there's several of them.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
It's not actually War Machine.
War Machine drone. Well, it's a War Machine drone.
Yes.
I don't know who's running him. This person. That person and that. I think it's... Is it? It's not... I don't know what it is. But, This concept has been done. Like the flash forward and then that thing. Do you think it works in this situation, Eric?
I think this is very messy and it's difficult for me to follow. It also doesn't help that the art keeps changing. Like, this is already all over the place. A lot of different characters. A lot of them that I don't know. I don't know all the aspects of this very complicated story. This is a challenge for me to read. It's not terrible. I enjoy Hickman. I enjoy a lot of the people that worked on this book. It just doesn't work tremendously well for me. But I don't know. Are you talking about? Are you want to talk specifically about the whole device of
Yeah, I'm just
forward.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, like, does it? It's a mystery. Yeah. That's what effectively it creates. It creates a mystery. What happened?
This is a device that Kurt Vonnegut would always say people should use. That he would say, give away the ending as soon as possible, and then, you know, that sort of sets sets the tension, and you're building towards resolving it. And it's that same device. It's not terribly clever, but it does sort of set a time bomb. You know, you're trying to figure out what's going on, and you're working towards it. But I think that it's, for me at least, it's setting up too much, and I am just getting it's a little muddy for me.
I would say that the mystery itself actually engages me. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole segment from here on, I'm showing the page where we are starting at Shield Tower with Amadeus Cho doing, like, a break-in and trying to escape and being confronted by, you know, the Shield superheroes. That works very well, and that really does engage me. And I want to know, you know, Invisible Woman's on the last page, like, where is my husband?
Right.
Where are all these people? And, you know, Amadeus Cho isn't saying anything because he's kind of being a representative of them in the world. I find it interesting that Captain Britain is in there. We didn't really get any of that in the New Avengers. But that is very interesting to me. They do not kind of connect the Hyperion and Thor things in the Savage Land, and then the kind of cosmic Star Brand and all those characters that Hickman kind of introduced, plus the Cannonball stuff. Like, it doesn't connect why we are following them. There's no reason. We're just showing them, but we don't know why we're seeing them. And it does. There's not as much immediacy in their story. Like, you follow that Amadeus Cho thing, you're like, wow, it's like in the middle of a heist. It's interesting. Then we just see, like, Thor and Hyperion just kind of broing out on a mountain. Right. And we don't know why. Like, there has to be a reason for us to want to follow them.
That part just felt inserted to me just to remind people that there's a Thor arc going on. You know, a big event in Thor besides this event.
Well, I think it ties into that just because you see clearly he doesn't have his hammer. He has his axe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's...
He's got a destroyer arm. Probably shouldn't be talking like this. Yeah, it's not
great for radio.
Not good for recording.
No. But he has a destroyer arm. And, you know, that inherently raises questions about what happened. And if they could tie it into the time jump at all, like, I think that'd be... But all we get is kind of nothing.
Yes.
The art is inconsistent, mainly because I think they're trying to push this because Hickman, there is a time limit on his contract, and they want to get him as many books from him out as fast as they can.
Yes.
So they are going to have... They don't care about four artists working on something just to get it out, which doesn't... I mean, they do try and mitigate it by having it set in different places.
Yes.
But it's still jarring to a certain extent.
Mostly because it's such disparate styles. The Cannonball story is very cartoony, and I do not particularly like the way it's stylized. The Amadeus Cho, that's you, isn't it? Who is it?
Jim Chung, I believe.
Jim Chung.
Okay. I want to say it's Jim Chung. It looks like Jim Chung to me.
I don't know. I think that's one of the reasons that's one of the better parts, is it's better art and it tells the story better. The whole Cannonball part is completely uninteresting to me.
I'm not necessarily not interested in it, but it certainly doesn't feel very urgent. It just kind of is just, here's part of the story.
Yeah.
And if you could take that part out and make this comic a dollar less, I would have volunteered for that.
Yes.
Overall, I am interested in the mystery. I do want to know what happens.
Yes.
So I am a buy. It is a little bit messy, but without reading every Avengers comic, because I've read all the new Avengers and we read all of Infinity, but Avengers, this is number 35. Book has been published mostly twice a month since it started. So there's a lot of it. We have not read Avengers all the way through. So a lot of it is based in stuff that just haven't read. So it's going to be hard picking up, but I think that some of that stuff I think will be ironed out because we're going to get more of the nitty gritty of the mystery and not just trying to get the ball rolling. But I think it works well enough to get that ball, to get the mystery question at least out of the way. Like, what happened? Where are the Illuminati? Why are they wanted? I'm a buy.
And again, I'm not terribly motivated to buy this book, but I agree with everything that you just said, that it does pique my interest. I want to buy the next book. I wish I hadn't bought this one. But I don't know that I would be interested in the next book without this one. I think it sells the concept, but I kind of regret buying it.
So what does that mean?
Dude, it's complicated.
You gotta give an answer.
I know.
Gotta jump off the fence.
I don't think I'm on the fence. I feel like I'm a do not buy one.
Okay. Well, another split decision of Eric hating comics.
I hate everything.
I hate everything. Well, we're gonna decide more concretely on this one. Next up is our only DC book of the week, because we're boycotting September gimmick month from DC, because all the holographic covers of bullshit. We're reading Grant Morrison's DC Comics proudly presents Multiversity Conquerors from the Society of Supervillains, Society of Superheroes number one. I do not know why they give it a new number one title. Why can't they just?
Are they going to do that for every single issue?
I really, God, hope they don't.
I think they're going to. That's his gimmick.
It's the most annoying thing.
It's pretty dumb.
Written by Grant Morrison, pencils by Chris Sprouse, Carl Story and Walden Wong on inks, Dave McKeag on colors, Carlos M. Mengual on letters. This certainly is a lot more clear. Like, it's much more cut and dry than that first Multiversity issue. This is just basically following. It's an alternate Earth with a lot of kind of Dr. Fate and some other regular superheroes, some pulp inspired heroes. People, he's just pulling on a lot of different influences. Golden Age things. You know, it's Grant Morrison. That's what he does with these, especially. We get a Green Lantern that looks like the devil. He's fighting, they're fighting, Vandal Savage. You know, we have two immortal men are kind of the framework of the story where they're doing battle. And it's kind of actually similar to that story that's been going on in New Avengers, where there's alternate Earths that are come crashing into each other. But this is not, they're not going to actually explode. They're just going to,
merge. They have a crisis event.
Yeah.
And they become one.
Yeah. And, but they're basically doing battle and trying to figure out who's going to control all this stuff. And Dr. Fate's doing all this and keeping an eye on, I guess, the whole multiverse event that's also happening. It's fun. It's an adventure comic, kind of. It's not really... It doesn't require all the homework that the previous one did. You can just kind of enjoy it for what it is.
You can just read it, and it's a fun read. I think that it has everything that I enjoyed about the first Multiversity and tells a more coherent story.
I know you like Chris Sprouse, right?
Yes. Why do you ask? I know.
I think we've read the
other Strong.
Tom
Strong.
Tom Strong. We read that.
Sir Thomas Strong.
And Chris Sprouse drew that too.
Yes, he did, famously.
And
so.
And they're similar. I would say that this the similarities are not coincidental. It's also kind of that adventure-y, fun kind of Golden Age type comic book story. I don't really know what else to say about it.
It's kind of better than the first book.
I like it more. I'm a buy.
Yeah, I am a buy as well. Very good book.
I don't like this whole naming crap. I don't know why they just couldn't call it Multiversity 2. Why can't they just name it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
I suspect that it's going to be number 1, number 1, number 1, number 1, and number 1.
They'll probably sell better, but I don't... It's stupid when they're the same thing. The Multiversity, 2 number 1s. I don't...
Yes, what? It's... the whole thing is kind of a joke on comics anyway, so...
I guess it is, yes.
Everything is meta and meta and meta.
Yeah, but we're biased, double Y. It's bad. We like it. It's more straightforward and just simple, like Grant Morrison, hey, write a comic that we can enjoy. I think that's what this gets down to. Next up is our first... You got that right, folks. First Okay, yeah, our first indie book is George Perez Sirens, apparently, because that's what this, that's what Comixology, has called this, but is Sirens, one, from Boom, written, illustrated, and created by George Perez, colors by Leonardo Pacioratti, letters by Ed Dukeshire.
Ed Dukeshire.
This is, Eric, what do you think about this?
I hate it.
Okay.
I it took me about, the iPad is so slow.
Compared to mine, yeah.
No, yours is like blazing lightning fast. When I got here to the part where I thought they were playing an MMO, I was like, okay, this is intriguing. And it just kept getting deeper and deeper and deeper. You know, just like, hey, dog, I heard you like stories, so I put a story in your story in your story in your story.
There's a lot of story in this story.
Yeah, and it just got to a point where this is so convoluted. I mean, it's a mess. But, I mean, it was written by Perez, right? Man is clearly not a professional writer.
he's more known for his art. Yes.
You know, I think it's interesting. I did think about this because this looks very different from Infinity Gauntlet.
Right.
That really felt a part of its time, and this feels I wouldn't even think that it's the same person. It's so different.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's him trying to adapt to a more modern sensibility or if he's trying to just be more indie.
Yeah, do different.
But I mean, it's good art. I enjoy it. I
don't dislike it by any means. It does feel like he just threw like a genre bomb at the wall and went,
genre bomb. Just I love that.
Genre grenade and like whatever blasted.
Yes.
Whatever picture got formed, he just went, well, that's what I'm... So the basic premise is that there's these sirens, like female heroes, adventurers, people, I don't even know. Some of them have powers, some of them don't. Some of them are just warriors. It's hard to say. They're not really super... They're very defined by the tropes that he draws. One's a gladiator.
Yes.
One's in the Wild West. One's naked.
Yes. One says tarnation and hellfire all the time.
One's getting raped when we start the story. I mean, not at the moment, but she's basically living a life of sex slavery.
Yes.
Yes. I also do not like this comic book.
It's not that good.
No, it's... There's a lot of stuff happening. None of it seems to be that... None of it is that interesting to me. None of it went, oh, wow. Like, if they had just gone on with that, like... You know, we start the story off with this woman saving, basically, like, finding a dragon. And then we jump to the future where there's dragons, dragons are a space race. That's a story. We don't have to do more than that.
And this is something that we talk about a lot of people trying to throw in every goddamn thing that they can, and it just completely ruins it.
All this is not, like, you don't need to do all of this. Again, the art is fine. It doesn't look like Infinity Gauntlet to me at all.
No, it looks nothing like it.
The story is...
It's a mess.
Yeah, it's so much.
It's a complete mess.
It's very much... The art isn't, you say, rooted in a particular time period necessarily. This story, how it's told, is... It's not where... This is like a 1987 comic book being told to us.
Yes. Except worse.
And
it doesn't have like a Starlin or a Claremont telling the story.
No, not framed very well.
No, it's not.
Do not buy Sirens number one.
Do not support Mr. Perez.
I'm sorry, Mr. George Perez.
Yeah,
you're a fine gentleman, but...
You have a lot of funny looking shirts.
I saw you look confused at Dragon Con walking through the bar area, but it was...
That doesn't surprise me.
What's the middle hotel?
I don't know.
Marriott? I think it's the Marriott.
I don't know.
With all the bar levels.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's
all these drunk people in costume and George Perez in Hawaiian shirts walking through. I'm like,
why would he look?
Looking mildly confused.
But how did I get to a Comic Con?
I don't know.
This has never happened to me before.
Except I'm at all of them.
Yes, exactly.
So we're double do not buy. We're lastly this week. We are hitting up Shudder number 6. We're checking back in. This is we've been out of this series for a while. I've read a few of the issues in between. I was kind of underwhelmed by the ones I had read. I think I read 2 and 3. I was just like, it's not bad, but it's not nearly as good. Eric's having some difficulties with his Comixology.
The difficulty, it's not with Comixology, it's with my iPad, yeah. Which is a piece of junk.
My iPad is working fine.
Well, that's dude, I can't even get the newer operating system on mine. I'm rooted in the past.
But this is written by Joe King, art by Leila Del Duca. But yeah, Joe King writing, Leila Del Duca art, Owen Gianni doing colors, Ed Brisson doing the letters. Design, quote unquote, by Tim Long and Monica Garcia. There's also a backup story about, or two backup stories, or I don't know, they're Tiger Lawyer.
Tiger Lawyer.
It's very important, Tiger Lawyer. But I had not read this book in a few issues, but I still basically understood what was happening. It's not too complex a story. Kate is basically being hunted right now with her brother, younger brother, that she's picked up along the way with, and their little kitty cat. AI robot kitty cat.
Yes, full of chocolate.
Full of chocolate, like they are.
Isn't that exactly what you want? A robot cat full of chocolate?
I'm not against it. I'm for it.
Yeah.
I'm for it. I ain't against it.
You gonna put it on your wedding registry?
Now I am.
They have that in Bed Bath & Beyond.
Amazon.com all the way.
Robot cat full of chocolate.
Robot cat full of chocolate. Yeah, but I mean, that's the basic story here. They're being hunted. They fight a Triceratops at one point. That happens.
Not really fight, just sort of stab it.
They stab it. Well, they fight for very briefly, and then they stab it in the face. There's a fight.
I guess.
But this is a much more action-oriented issue than what we've seen prior. At least what I've seen prior. Even the ones I've seen where nothing was, this much action in it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Eric? What are your thoughts? I know we haven't checked in with this in a while. I knew it'd be kind of iffy coming back in without reading everything, but I wanted to see where it was.
I regret not reading the ones in between. I know you had warned me to not even bother.
Well, I'd wait for a trade or something like that.
Well, I kind of want to follow up on this because I remember really loving the first issue. I enjoyed this. I kind of want to read the fill-in. I'm still very interested in this book. I kind of want to know who the hell these people are that I just all watched die.
Well, I don't think any of the people who died are that important. Aside,
I imagine not, but we follow them around as if they're more important than them just dying right here. So I think they're at least established a couple issues ago, and they've got some page time there. You know,
yes.
I want to know more about him, and I want to know more of what's going on. I kind of regret missing the issues that I did, but this is good. I think I'm very interested in this series. Again, reinvigorated me.
Reinvigorated. Yeah, I thought it was fun, interesting. A little bit more. There's a little bit more gravitas to this one.
Yes.
Than the first one. The first one felt more like fun and kind of adventurous. This is certainly a little more, definitely more violent and more kind of grim. And so this, you know, child and being involved in
a child shooting the guts out of a lion.
Yeah, no, shotguns. Children wielding shotguns. He luckily he is upset about it, as he should be.
Yes.
Yeah. That's yeah. Now they're fighting whatever this thing is.
It's bone dragon.
It is a something.
Yes.
It has bat wings and fur and lots of arms, 6 arms. Actually, more than 6 arms. There's little tiny arms, too, and antlers. Whatever it is, it's cool looking. I'm a buy. It's fun.
Absolutely.
It's good. Art's nice as well.
It's good. No, it's delightful. It's one of the major selling points to me. The whole narrative is a lot of similar, I don't want to use the word tropes, but it's a similar shape to Saga, you know.
Well, I think we mentioned this occasionally, like we talked about it with even today earlier with Adventure Time.
Yes.
With a lot of seeing Pendleton Ward art styles being successful nowadays, But I think that works in not even art style, but story style. Like art, a structure of a story. They go, oh, that'll work. People will buy it.
Yes.
Well, that story I've wanted to tell, that's similar.
Yes.
Similar style, similar structure. I could sell that. Let's try and do that. So you see it then pop up when one big thing could become successful.
It's just, I don't know. It's kind of interesting to see those movements.
But, yeah, Double Vi, shout out number 6. Hey, Eric, did you want to talk about Teen Dog?
I read two extra books this week.
Whoa, crazy.
Gosh, what is it called? Yeah, Edge of the Spider-Verse. Because I have
number
been
two?
Seeing, yes.
With Gwen Stacy, I was curious.
Numero dos.
It looked really good.
It sort of is not.
Okay, all right.
I had been seeing these character designs because I think this is a really fun looking character.
It looks good, yeah.
A what if scenario with a woman, specifically a character who was basically a plot device, you know, for basically the woman in the refrigerator becoming a real character and becoming a super heroine with a really fun looking costume. This book should be better than it is. It's not terrible, but it is really pandering. They're in a band. It's a little dumb.
Okay.
It's a little pandering.
They're all these Edge of Spider-Verse characters are going to appear in the Spider-Verse crossover. Like every one of these are. This is just to fill out that event to show you, like, here's people.
I'm showing Robbie a panel right now
about Flash Thompson wearing shorty shorts.
This specific
that ass.
Yeah,
I think that's what they're saying.
They are. I kind of wish they were, but
I don't think they're allowed to say that.
It's a lot of things that don't quite work, but it's not awful. I don't know that I would recommend it yet. I think the concept is solid. The execution is a little bit lacking. The art is good, but not great. I think this book deserves to be a little bit better than it is.
Did you like Teen Dog?
That was the other book.
Yeah, did you like
Teen
that?
Dog? I don't even know. Was that this week? I thought
it was last week, but I want to know what you think.
I figured it was. It is dumber than a bag of hammers, but it's shocking that it works as well as it does. It realizes it's stupid. Like I thought, at least the way it's set up, you know, it's set up like it doesn't realize, but it does realize.
Yeah,
It is trying to be as stupid and pandering, basically, as that last book is, but it's kind of making fun of that. Yet it does it in a way that's both ironic and not ironic.
I was like looking at him like, it looks like someone went like, what if we actually made a Poochie comic book?
It is exactly Poochie.
And I'm just like, I don't wanna, that's fine. I got all the irony I needed out of that just by watching the Simpsons episode.
That's the thing, is it's just kind of a delightful little book. You know?
It's cute.
It's cute. It's fun.
He's holding pizza. I can't get too angry about that.
Well, this is him finding true love. His true love is pizza.
Of course. As it is.
Yes. It is. It's stupid as hell, and it's funny. I mean, what can you say about it? It's a good book, and it's worth reading.
Okay.
I honestly, you can read my copy and tell me what you think about it if you can suffer through my iPad. Lord knows I barely can.
I think that's enough for weekly floppies.
That's
the thing we got. We
got a little extra flop in there.
And we got a little bit. We got, and this time it was Eric. Wasn't me.
I know.
I did reach the new trees, but I don't think it's worth, you wouldn't like it, I don't think.
Really?
There's more stuff happening, but it's not like,
There's explosive. More stuff happening.
If you like the unit, it's basically just like reading questionable content. It's just kind of like,
yeah,
you're there and you like the world. If you like the world, you like the comic. If you don't, it's not like here hitting you in the face with momentous things.
It's storytelling in the manner of trees.
There's going to be more of it. I know that. There's going to be a second arc, because Warren Ellis has written that he's starting a second arc.
Jesus.
But
It's leading to something, and for seems to be in issue 6. I just can't figure it out.
Well, that's all well and good. Yeah.
It's not going to ease your complaints about it. So
I'm going to wait for you to tell me to buy a trade.
Yeah. I probably will tell you not to buy the trade because at this point it's 5 issues. Unless the 6th issue is like, ugh. I mean, I like it. I will buy a trade probably, but I buy everything Warren Ellis is right. So it doesn't, I'm a fanboy.
You want to crawl inside his anus and.
Not inside.
Cuddle up next to.
On the side.
There you go. That's good.
Volcano.
I guess you got to draw the line somewhere.
You do. It's at the edge. We're going to jump over to our last segment of the week is Nerd Boy Book Club. This is where Eric and I decide on a longer collected work. Tell you guys what it is. We read it all together and we discuss it. We have discussion. It's like I'm back in lit class again, except now it has pictures. Mm-hmm. This week we are doing Andre the Giant, Life and Legend by Box Brown. It is a comic biography of Andre the Giant, one of the most well-known wrestlers of all time, professional wrestlers.
One of my very favorites.
It's hard not to like Andre the Giant.
It really is.
And I don't know, a lot of this is going to devolve into just discussion of how interesting a person he was, that's why this book I think succeeds. At its core level is because it chose someone who is at his core a super interesting guy who has a super interesting life.
And is not particularly, the story is not particularly well known.
No, he's not many people know who Andre, if you say Andre the Giant, even if you were born, if you're 10 years old, you probably know who Andre the Giant is because you've seen Princess Bride or if you watched even a clip of old wrestling, he generally shows up.
He kind of stands out.
Yeah, he's a giant.
Yes.
It's a biography. It lists all the places it got a lot of his sources from in the back. And it kind of jumps around his life. You know, it starts him as a young man and then, you know, he meets Samuel Beckett, the playwright, as a 12-year-old. And, you know, we follow him as he does odd jobs and then becomes a wrestler and becomes successful in America and Japan, travels the world, kind of picks up tidbits from different parts of his life that illustrate what his life was like. It's things that are emblematic of it in greater detail. Like a comic book is not going to, you're not, the, to tell his entire life would be, it's not like it's necessarily going to show everything he's done. It just shows the highlights.
It's the fun anecdotes, and it gives you a good outline of who he is and what his struggle was and all the problems that he had in his life and the good and terrible things that he had done.
Yeah, there's, I think the, why this works best as a comic book, I mean, you could obviously write an actual prose biography about him, but why this works, I say, in a comic book versus, like, making a movie or something or a TV show miniseries about him is because who would play him?
I thought you were going to say something else, but no, exactly.
It's impossible because
you're going to have a CGI Andre the Giant.
Yeah, he, like,
and the movie would just be called The Uncanny Valley.
Yeah, because there's no person who could ever be this man. There's even, I mean, there's current people who are, I mean, the big show in WWE right now is not as big as Andre, but he is a very large man who's comparable in size. Yes. But it'd be ridiculous to try and tell this story with someone else playing Andre because
he was very much one of a kind, and that's a lot of what this book is about.
Yeah. Where do you want? Do you want to talk about the art first, Eric, and then we can kind of just jump around the stories? And
there's no reason not to talk about it first. I think that one of the reasons that I think it does work really well is it is sort of mysteriously endearing, kind of in the same way that Andre was, and I think it works really well that way. Like, it's not stellar art. It tells the story extremely well. Like, at no point are you really confused at what's going on. You know, it works well. It works well with the writing and the art. They complement each other very well. You know, it can be that way with, when a writer is, or when an artist is writing and drawing,
he
knows what he's capable of and he's not overriding or
No.
Trying to tell too much of the story.
And it's lighthearted.
Yeah, and it is. It kind of takes the sting out of the more negative aspects.
Yeah. It doesn't paint him as a perfect person. It doesn't try to hide.
But it also is a cartoon.
Yes.
And it softens these things.
It does.
Which I think they could have done. They could have touched on more of that. Like, I thought it was, I thought Andre never had any children. And they point out that he more than likely did have a daughter.
Yeah.
And did not really support her. He gave them $1,000 a month when he, I don't know if he actually was a millionaire, but he certainly owned a lot of land out in North Carolina, and he had some assets to his name.
He had enough money to
survive. Yeah, he was one of the top talents in professional wrestling.
Yeah.
So I don't think he was exactly poor.
He wasn't poor, but it was before the big boom of the 80s. He was at the very beginning of that. Like, he was integral. They even mention in this book that he is integral to that, like, that WrestleMania 3 event with Hulk Hogan, that, you know, the largest attendance record ever, at least they claim.
Right.
But it is wrestling. Oh yeah, there are a million people were there. but
it's all lies.
He was there at the beginning, but by the time it really jumped into like past the mid 80s, he was in such bad shape he couldn't wrestle on a regular basis. They still used him from time to time, but and the book touches on that, the how his body was breaking down, but when he was the biggest, you know, figuratively, they in the mid to late to mid 70s, late 70s, early 80s, they did not make nearly as much money as they did as, you know, Hogan and his ilk made in the 80s, and they still make today. Like, the top 1% are, you know, still make tons of money, but yes. In the 70s, when it was very regional, and before WWF was a thing, like a nationwide company, I don't know how much money. I mean, I'm sure he made well enough to live on. He was a draw, he's unique. No one else you cannot see him anywhere else in any other way. But I don't know if he's a millionaire.
They describe him as such.
But yeah. He may have been a millionaire. I know he didn't probably spend his money. I mean, he had a farm. That's that's a ranch. That's all. He didn't like. I don't think he was very extravagant. He wasn't Ric Flair.
No.
Wheeling and dealing.
Mm-hmm. Spending all his money on yellow pants.
Yeah, wanting all the money on the yellow pants. But I really like. I think the art style is very endearing. Like,
yes.
It makes. Andre was like a gigantic guy. It could be easy to make him like look scary.
Yes.
But they make him.
Look cuddly.
Cuddly, yeah.
I think that's the way most people think of him. You know, he's a cuddly guy and is very likable. And
yeah.
I think it works very much in, you know, very much in his favor. Very much. It helps the book a lot.
Yeah. That right there, that drawing of him, that's as a young man. This is when they're first getting in a meeting with Vincent McMahon Senior, mm-hmm. the father of the current president of WWE.
Yes,
they show like most people think of Andre. They think of him like the image they think of is from WrestleMania 3 when he's fighting Hogan. That's really at the tail end of his like when he was stopping wrestling regularly. And he was already struggling, kind of his body breaking down. This is after injuries already. When he was young, like they tell him no more drop kicks and no more like, cause he was very athletic for his size. It was crazy. But most people don't think of him as like a, like really like built muscly dude. Yes. They think of him as like just a big giant man. But when he was in his early 20s, it was, like seeing him next to even the other wrestlers, like next to what a Hulk Hogan looked like, it was
ridiculous. And I think that's a testament to the book that it makes it, it softens his that this kind of, I mean, off, there's multiple times in the book where he uses his size to say, well, I don't care. You're not going to stop me. Mm-hmm. I want to, I'm hot. I'm taking my shirt off. And the bartender's, no, I don't, why, get out. No, yeah. Put your shirt back. He's like, well, what are you going to do?
Exactly.
I weigh 450 pounds. I'm 7 foot tall. What are you going to do? Call the cops. The cops are like, I mean, you're fine. Yeah. You keep your shirt off. You're fine, man. Yeah, you're good.
I'm not going to start a fight. I'm not going to try and arrest you. It's not worth it.
Yeah, he's a very low. That would be bad. Bad for all involved.
Yes.
But that they use these examples of his size often just would avoid incidents that normally people, like, if a normal person just took their shirt off in the middle of a bar and a bartender asked him to leave or to put his shirt back on, he didn't, he'd get thrown out. And this is, and he'd be considered like an asshole. And yet, I don't feel, like, you feel bad, you feel for Andre because of his size and because of all the problems he has, you know, dealing with life being so big. Like, we don't, like, there, he has that discussion near the end where he is, with the guy who works at his farm. Is that, I believe that's who it is?
Yeah, when the guy's like, I wish I was your size. He's like, no, you don't.
No, he's like, I wish I would, much simpler just being your size.
And I think that even in the introduction with Hogan about how, you know, he's, what is it he says exactly? There was never a situation where he could be comfortable. And the world is really not made for anything but medium-sized people.
Yes. For people who are 5 to 6 foot tall.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not even a huge guy, and there are a lot of situations where I'm terribly uncomfortable, so I can't even imagine.
Yeah, I think, and leading off the story that way, it's structured very well, and it yes. starts off giving you sympathy for this guy who is just a, was by his size can often be intimidating.
I mean, you could be very easy to paint him as a monster,
which they did very in wrestling. Easy. That's why, but
yeah, absolutely.
They and you know, they show him off as a kid, and he's like, you know, he's cutting wood, and he's a simple country kid, and doesn't understand all of this. Like, he's just kind of just going about his life. He doesn't really think about how big he is, aside from that he can't get on the school bus. And then they show that in an early age, that obviously...
And when Steve Zissou won't let him on the bus.
I know, damn you. Fuck you, Steve Zissou.
Steve!
But, like, the fact that he's 12 years old and already dealing with the problem with his size. Like, you're 12 and you can't get on the bus. And it gives you the impression you understand why... Life, like, how life is hard for him for, you know, the extent of his,
That's some good talking there, chicken man.
But yeah, from 12 years onwards, it's clear that, you know, he has problems because of his size. You know, he lifts up cars and, you know, people like him because, oh, look at all the kind of crazy stuff he can do. But then at the same time, they, you know, they make fun of him. They avoid him. And even the wrestlers, a lot of times Hogan talks about it in the very beginning. Like, people would just hit him as hard as they can because they think, oh, he's gigantic. It doesn't matter. I don't have to, you know, pull my punches when we're wrestling because he's Andre the Giant. He's immovable. He doesn't feel pain. Where else do you want to... I guess we should probably go to the feats of his debauchery. I think that's the natural... Because it goes to great lengths to show... Like, it makes him sympathetic, but also I think that, like a lot of people who suffer a lot of their lives or never feel comfortable, he just goes to alcohol to kind of ease...
Very clearly an alcoholic, but...
Most wrestlers of that time period are... if not drinking drugs, something.
Oh, sure.
And still nowadays, it's still a terrible problem.
I think just about anyone in show business. I mean, it's readily available to them.
And
what else do they have to do?
And wrestlers go through so much physical punishment.
Yes, absolutely. And Andre was
even worse because he's flying in planes. Like nowadays, the Big Show, who is 7 foot tall and weighs 450 pounds, he has his own bus.
Yeah.
He drives around in his bus, or they buy him first class seats where he has lots of leg room, or they give him two seats so he can sit in one, so he can fit. They understand that how much problem, but him trying to go on an airplane, and even in a first class seat in the 80s or the 70s, I can't imagine a 10-hour flight. He says, what, order him 8 double screwdrivers?
Yes.
Or I think it was
it triple? It was a lot of alcohol.
It was a lot. It was a lot of booze. And the fact that I think how much anesthetic he needed for his back surgery.
That's kind of an infamous story, I think. And I believe that they kind of, whatever they used, they invented to find out how much anesthetic to use. They actually used that. It's in standard practice today. They invented it with Andre the Giant. That's the story I heard.
Okay. Well,
by the way, I don't know if it's a fact or not.
Well, I think that's part of the charm of Andre is that you hear all these kind of stories. You're like, is it true? Or is it just kind of been something blown up out of proportion? But, I mean, a lot of these things are corroborated by 3 or 4 sources.
Yeah.
And wrestlers do tell tall tales, but the fact that they're believable with Andre makes it more fun because you go, well, it's Andre. So we weighed 500 pounds. It's possible that he could drink a bottle of vodka and just feel kind of tingly.
There were many, many stories of him going to bars and drinking 100 beers at once.
Because that's what it would take. He weighed 500 pounds. He was gigantic.
He was a monster.
Yeah. And I think it's also, they set the kind of the tone of this very early when he first goes to that doctor in Japan. And he tells him, oh, you're not going to make it to 40 years old.
Yeah.
That you're going to, eventually your body's going to fall apart.
Yes.
And you're going to die young. And there's nothing you can do about it.
I think I would be an alcoholic as well.
Yeah,
exactly. Maybe that's what most of these guys are feeling. And they just like, you know, I'm going to die at 45. Like, what was his name that died recently? The suicide?
Sean O'Hare.
I think it was some Irish name.
Sean O'Hare. He was not, he never was very famous, but yeah, I mean, it's a long list of many wrestlers who
died. Oh, they usually don't make, I mean, a lot of professional athletes don't really, they don't really have good old age.
No.
You know, they'll get dementia from all the blows to the head or something equally terrible. You know, they'll die in their middle age, 40s or 50s, and you know, they don't do it for longevity. Apparently they do it for the money and the chicks and
the glory, the fame, the drugs, rather than normal things. Yeah,
yeah.
Burnout rather than fade away.
Yes,
kind of theory. But I mean,
Andre had no choice.
He had no choice. Yeah, I think that's part of the and why though the debauchery and like the hard living and stuff like that. We kind of, reading this, you never go, "Why? That's awful," or "Man, he drank too much. That's gross," or you know, he was an addict or something. You go, "Well,
you do kind of." I do kind of think he's an addict, but what?
I mean, that doesn't mean. I mean, I don't disparage him for it. I mean, obviously, yeah.
There's not a lot of judgment behind it.
No, you just go, "Oh, well, that you think you, it's sympathy. It's always sympathy. It's never, you know, the fact that you know he was drinking all the time, and I think it's really funny that we see him visit prostitute, but all they do is just have coffee. Like, yeah, I hung out with prostitutes because they didn't care if I was a giant. They didn't think I was strange. They just went, okay, hey, how's it going? I don't know. I love it. I love this book. I love wrestling.
No, I had a delight reading it. This is probably a book I will pick up several times and read over and over.
It's a fast read.
It really is. I read it all after my car broke down on Gandy Bridge, and I had to park on the beach and let my radiator cool down. I read all of it in like one sitting, pretty much.
Yeah, it also tells like anybody who loves wrestling, and especially like all those wrestlers from the 70s and 80s, this book is filled with them, and like, he does very good caricatures of them.
Yeah.
They're instantly recognizable.
It's the most adorable Hogan I've ever seen.
Yeah, the Hogan's really good, but
I love this one.
That's the Hulkster, yeah.
Yeah, that's the Nasty Boys. It's just, it's good.
Dusty Rhodes. There's an Arn Anderson who's never identified, but I'm pretty positive that's Arn Anderson in the
diary. Can you show me?
Yeah. He's pretty I mean, let me see. It's in a diner. When, yeah, here it is. This. I don't know who else that would be. Mm-hmm. That has to be Arne Anderson. That beard with that hair and that. I love Arne Anderson, the Enforcer. He's the best. But, you know, it deals a lot of kind of the. It plays a lot with the book explains a lot of kind of wrestling ideas and terms throughout it. But it really, Andre is one of, you know, the best examples of how, like, crazy stories in wrestling, like the stories of him fighting people just randomly. It's like, hey, I want to fight. They're like, all right. And that happens in wrestling. People in wrestlers are just like, you know, they're full of testosterone and anger. So they just want to fight all the time with each other, especially. How do you feel about the more negative things they show him doing? You know, the time he uses a racial epithet on a bus. And
I was very jarred by that one in particular, because it's, we have a much rosier picture of that sort of thing. You and I think we have a lot of white male privilege as far as that goes.
Yeah.
So we tend not to think or notice that stuff. But you wouldn't think, I don't like to think of anyone that I admire, even in any capacity, that they might have some aspect or even be a part of that time period.
Yeah.
I mean, even someone like, let's say, Darwin, who I have a lot of admiration for, he was very much a product of his time, and as such was a little bit on the racist side. Well, our discussion about Lovecraft.
Yeah, Lovecraft was very racist.
Yeah. And apparently, we had that discussion about how, like, if you look at his writing sort of through that lens, like, I'm not even sure. I'm not too familiar with Lovecraft's work, but
I've heard it kind of colors a little bit. You can see it a little in there. It's mostly, he's not actually, honestly, that great of a writer.
Yes,
his ideas were.
No, thing. Exactly. That was the whole thing, is no one had ever done anything like that. But that's neither here
nor there. No, but
the idea is,
I mean,
finding people that are sort of a product of that, regardless.
Yeah,
it's jarring. It's strange to recognize that.
It's supposed to show, like, it does the job, along with, you know, his estranged daughter and stuff like that. It mm-hmm. shows them that he's a person, like, he had flaws. He wasn't a perfect person by any means, by any stretch of the imagination. But, and obviously that it, you know, Bad News Brown is going to report the story in a different way than the, like, Hulk remembers it. And they even mention that in the footnotes, like, you know, obviously any of these stories, a lot of them are based on hearsay and people's differing opinions. But, I mean, I don't have a problem believing that he would use words like that. But, I mean, he's a simple country boy from France.
Well, even
it's 1980.
No, exactly.
I think, people nowadays.
No, I believe it entirely. Specifically because English is not his first language. He's not an American. He doesn't understand the power behind that word.
Yeah, people still don't.
No, people don't.
It's stupid.
People don't understand the years of blood that word is soaked in. And it's just thrown around in a very cavalier manner.
Mama.
Yes.
Cavalier mama.
Yes. It's talking's hard.
It is hard. I have an experience with that already.
It was very jarring to see, though. I was not expecting it. I'm really glad that it's in there. I'm glad that we get a sense of who he is, good and bad. Not just the stories that are like, oh my god, this guy's larger than life and incredible. But I think all of it paints a really interesting picture of who he is.
Yeah, I think it shows, it never shows him as being kind of mean.
No.
Like, I mean, Hogan points out, like, that beginning, in the very beginning that you already mentioned, that, you know, the Nasty Boys were, call him mean.
Yeah.
And I don't think he ever
wasn't meant to be mean necessarily. He'd get angry, but I don't think he was necessarily like ill will towards anybody. He was because of the fact that he knew he was going to die early.
I think he was also in a lot of tremendous pain. His joints are breaking down, and that kind of shit will make you grumpy.
I think he's trying to get as much out of life as he can while he still can.
And you know, they tell these anecdotes from The Princess Bride and these anecdotes from talk shows and the fact that, you know, this kind of the celebrity status he had of being a giant. And I think that's more than any other wrestler, this book works for Andre.
Because he has, like, cultural cachet. It's
I think the funniest thing in this is him and Christopher Guest on the set of Princess Bride, where Christopher Guest makes sure to shake his hand every single day. He's like, and says, I never get tired of shaking hands with that guy, because Christopher Guest's hands are like a third or quarter of the size of Andre's hands at this point. But the book is funny, but it's also like tremendously sad and touching. Like at the end, especially when his body starts breaking down, and you know, to be known as a guy who is big, like that's he's the giant, Andre the Giant. His title is the Giant, and you know, he's known for I'm big, I'm strong, I'm immovable. And at the end of his life, he is the opposite of that. Yes. He is weak and fragile and can barely move. And the fact that, I don't know, it's really sad that, you know, you watch his matches from, they talk about him in when he's doing tag team matches in Japan in the early 90s, you know, right before he dies, basically, maybe a year or two before he dies. Like, him and Mick Foley were on a tag team match together. Like, Mick Foley was on his team, and watching Andre in that match it's heartbreaking, because he's leaning hard on the ring ropes the entire time. He comes in the ring for a second, does one thing, and then goes back out because he can't do anything really at all. And I don't know if he felt some kind of obligation to the wrestling business. A lot of wrestlers do have that, where they push themselves because they're needed. Like, they even one point, like, you know, we need you. You know, so there's people saying, why don't you retire and all that? And I think, I know some of it is that the fact that he liked the camaraderie. That was the only place where he could maybe feel like one of the boys. Like, he could feel like he belonged. Like, you know, wrestling is a tale of, like, look at these weirdos. Look at this group of people that are all, like, either physically freakish, they're big or super strong, or they're, you know, measured by their prowess physically.
Yeah.
But there are also moments in this where it seems like he's going to quit, and then he gets called back in because he's needed, because he is a sell. He makes money for them because of how much of a attraction he is. Why this book is so good is because it goes back and it can be funny, but I thought also it could be sad. It transcends kind of being just rote retelling of these anecdotes, because you can find the most of them online quite easily. Like, wrestling people love telling Andre stories, so they're easy to find online. But the cartooning that makes it him both, you know, it shows him as a real person, but kind of good at heart.
I mean, the book touches on the end of his life. I mean, it shows. I think the way that it ends with him in, who's he talking to on the last airplane? It doesn't say. At one point he talks to Mean Gene, and
yeah.
Is that how it ends with Mean Gene? I want to say.
Mean Gene?
No, I don't, that's not Mean Gene.
No.
I know what Mean Gene looks like. That's not Mean Gene. But at one point he is on an airplane with Mean Gene.
Yes.
And he brings up there that part. And he's, you know, it's very touching about, you know, he's actually, you know, crying at that point because of, you know, people. He doesn't identify with anyone. I think that's the core of this, is that, you know, what made him such a great wrestler and a great attraction and
so popular is the fact that there's no one like him, even to this day. But at that same point, that because there's no one like him, he's like Superman. He's completely isolated, completely alone. There's no one that can identify with him. Even the biggest guys he wrestled, none of them went through what he went through. He was completely unique in that situation. And they talk about that. The book ends with, you know, it really hits on that because he's talking to a guy on the plane and how do you deal with, he said, asked him, Andre, how do you deal with these long flights to Japan? You know, he says, Card's boss can't drink, can't fit in the bathroom. So, you know, he has to flush himself out before he takes these long airplane trips because he's going back and forth to Japan all the time. You know, he tells him, you know, and he asks him why he doesn't retire. And he's like, I love it, but I love the ranch and there's not enough people to play cards with. And, you know, and the last page is just him on the airplane, deal the cards boss, it's a long flight. And that's, the way to end it that way, I think, is perfect because it shows that, you know, he just wants to, simple things like the ranch, like playing cards with the other wrestlers, you know, drinking beer.
Good food.
Travel. He was really trying to wring as much out of life as he possibly could.
It's a pretty French sentiment as well.
Yeah, it is.
A French giant.
Yeah. There's a postscript kind of, Andre died in 1983, going to attend the funeral of his father.
Oh, man. I missed it. It was his father.
Yeah. His dad had died, and he was going to his funeral when he died in his sleep, going to it. Just shows you what kind of, like, the heightened shortness of his life was. But it's a wonderful book. Really, really well done, well structured. Cartoon is really nice.
I think on that note, I liked your point earlier that it would be very difficult to tell this story in any other format. And I think that more than a lot of other things, that this says something about comic books as a medium where most people just sort of understand comics as superhero comics. This is an excellent example of a story that, a surprisingly simple story, that would be nowhere near as good in any other format.
Yeah.
As a book, you know, as just prose.
It doesn't illustrate his size as well.
Exactly. It would be dry. It would be uninteresting. It would just be a bunch of anecdotes. It just would not be as good. This holds together as one narrative. You know, it feels like it goes from A to Z, and it works really, really well.
And paints an honest portrait,
yes,
of a very, very interesting man. And there are all kinds of blurbs all over this book.
It is well represented.
Yeah, it's even with the John Darnielle, who I mentioned earlier.
Yeah,
he's
blurbing this book
as well as Mick Foley, Mandy Patinkin, Jim Ross, Matt Kitt. You got comic book guys. You got indie rockers. You got wrestlers and actors.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of shows you the breadth of his impact in the world as well. But I think with that, I think we can call it a day.
So next week, folks, we are going to read Snowpiercer, Volume 1 and 2 by Jacques Lob and Jean-Marc Rochette, if I pronounce that correctly. Inspired the recent film starring Chris Evans, and both Eric and I are very interested in it. So, yeah. Snowpiercer.
Now, we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Like us, subscribe to us, review us there. We really like it if you guys do it. It helps us get us more attention. I think I used too many pronouns in that sentence, but that's fine. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour. We're on Twitter at HBCHour. You can email us, handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. I think that's everything for us. For me,
we can make up more things.
I'm sure there's more stuff you can make up. For me, you can find me at Twitter at MixmasterCereal. It's MixmasterCereal. Eric, where can they find your stuff online?
You can find my stuff online at freewillunlimited.com. You did a voice.
I did. I don't know why. I just did it.
This happened.
I don't think I should keep it up, though.
No, probably not.
It's a pretty annoying voice.
It is. I'm sorry.
FreeWillUnlimited.com. That is my portfolio, my artworks. You can see most of the other stuff I do online by going to ericzgoodnight.com. And you can tweet at me by going to Mr. Bad Example, spelled M-R. Bad Example.
So with that, folks, we will call it a day. Have a good one.
Rock and roll.